It's the web's only podcast completely devoted to daily fantasy sports. Welcome to the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix. Here's your host, Dan Bach.
Hey everyone, what's up? Thank you so much for giving us a listen. We are the Roto-Grinders Daily Fantasy Fix, all presented by DailyJoust.com. I am Dan Bach, go by DB730. You can find me all across the daily fantasy landscape, and this podcast completely devoted to helping you become a better daily fantasy player and also kind of update you on all the things going on in this industry, because let's face it, it is definitely growing at a very rapid pace. I'm going to talk about the DFBC over there on FanDuel from Friday night. We got a new guy going to Vegas to play for $100,000. Also, an interview with last week's qualifier, MLB Syndicate is his name. His real name is Jamie Robbins, and very interesting character, as this guy's actually a poker player. You know, unlike a lot of the guys out there who are your average Joes, CPAs, bookkeepers, whatever, this guy's actually a professional poker player, finished 11th at the World Series of Poker in 2009, and is actually going to be in Vegas not too long before the DFBC to play in this year's World Series of Poker main event. So, a very interesting conversation with him. We talk all about the poker industry, the fantasy industry, so make sure you catch that here a little bit later in the podcast. And of course, as we always do, try to help you out building better rosters each and every day. So we give you some analysis on all the MLB games going on tonight, about 9 games or so on the schedule. So we'll help you break down the matchups there. So that's what we got on tap for today. Thank you, as always, for checking us out. Let's start it off with the DFBC from Friday night. Aretas, I don't know the proper way to pronounce it, but he was the winner at 74 points on a Colorado Rockies stack. Not the first guy ever to win with that strategy. But the strange thing is, this wasn't something that was building throughout the night. It all basically came to him in extra innings when the Rockies went crazy, scored 8 runs in 1 inning. So he probably went from like 200th place to first place in a matter of like 10 minutes, or maybe it was like 20 minutes, because scoring 8 runs is going to take some time to do. But nonetheless, it was got to be exciting for him. Who knows if he was even following it at that point in time. But not too often do you see a team score 8 runs in extra innings. And it got the job done for him. And, he wasn't the only guy to stack the Rockies. He also had Yu Darvish as his pitcher. But the issue that you run into sometimes is when you've got multiple players at a position, which one do you choose? And at third base, he decided to go with Chris Nelson instead of Jordan Pacheco. And Nelson just had a monster game. Triple, home run, finished with like 13.5 points. Well, I think Pacheco only had like 2.5 points. So even though a lot of people stacked the Rockies, I don't think a lot of people stacked him with Chris Nelson in there. And he was really the difference maker for him in this DFBC qualifier. So congratulations to him. We will talk to him a little bit later this week, I'm sure, about that win. We'll get his take on that. But let's go right into the interview that we did now. This is with MLB Syndicate, Jamie Robbins, going to Vegas to play for $100,000 at the end of July. Check it out. Joining us now on the podcast, excited to bring on our next winner of a DFBC qualifier. His name is Jamie Robbins. He goes by the alias of MLB Syndicate, and he was the big winner a couple of weeks ago. Jamie, congratulations on the win, and thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the podcast.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Now, you are a little bit interesting because most of the guys I talk to, and no offense to them, I mean, they'll all agree to this, they're like regular schmoes. You know, they've got regular jobs, they're accountants, they work for data processing companies. But you're the first kind of guy who I think is living the dream, at least one that a lot of us would like to live. And you're a professional poker player, and we're going to get into the DFBC in just a minute, but I want to know what it's like to be a professional poker player and how long you've been, I guess, a professional poker player.
Well, first thing I'll tell you is it's a tough way to make an easy living. So I can see where a lot of people think it's the dream scenario, because there's definitely some big scores once you get up to the higher stakes tournaments and stuff like that. But there's a lot of downsides. You know, you can go for a year without making a penny, you know, and being in the hole. But on the other side of it, like my 2009 main event run, I got 11th place, you know, out of 7,000 people in a cash for 890 grand. So that kind of sets you up for a few years. So there is a lot of that good stuff. You know, you get to fly around and travel and do some circuit events and all that. But it is a tough way to make an easy living after you've been a grinder for a while.
Now, tell me about that 2009 run. You know, I did a little bit of research and, you know, at the very least, you can, you know, maybe one day tell your kids, you know, I got busted out at the World Series of Poker by Phil Ivey. I mean, you know, he's only like the greatest poker player, arguably, of all time, I think some people will say. Tell me about that run, though. I mean, I actually saw an interview with you online afterwards, after you busted out. And I don't know who the woman was, but she was gorgeous. But you seemed like you were absolutely exhausted. I mean, is it you know, we use the term grinding. We're roto grinders. But the term originated in poker. What is it like to grind for that long in a tournament? Because I just can't fathom it.
Yeah, that was definitely the true definition of grinding right there. It's the biggest tournament in the world once a year, and it was like 13 or 14 days we played, and I think I tallied up, I think I played 66 hours of poker just in that tournament. And I was definitely exhausted. A lot of players were getting sick when we were down to about 100 players left, you know, the last two, 3 days of that tournament. There was a lot of people that were getting sick. They couldn't handle it. And yeah, I mean, it's a true grinder. You'll probably never see an older gentleman or woman win the main event in the near future anytime, because it really, as you see the past main event winners, they're all young kids now, 21 to 25 to 30, and because you need that stamina and that fatigue really kicks in. So it's not really something you can really prepare for. I kind of take pride in my health and training and staying up on all of that sort of stuff, and that kind of goes out the window after about 6 or 7 days, and you're just in that poker fog. You know, you don't know what day it is, what time it is, what's going on around you in the world. It's just, you go to sleep and you're seeing diamonds and clubs. So it's pretty hardcore. It's a tough thing, but it was amazing. Great experience, and like you said, Phil Ivey knocked me out 11, so that made everything that much more intense, because he was there and he's known as, you know, the best poker player in the world by many people. So it was great, though. It was fun, man, and I hope to do it again this year.
And the paycheck didn't suck at the end of the day either. And I saw you actually cash the next year as well in 2010, so you actually have done pretty well in the main event. And when's the date of the main event this year?
I believe it starts on July 7th, and we have maybe three or four day one starting days this year. And then we combine the fields together on day two, and I'm not sure how many we're going for this year. I think they've kind of cut the schedule down so we can fit it in maybe 7 or 8 days to make the final table. So, yeah, it's coming up on July 7th, so I'll be flying out to Vegas. I actually just got home from Vegas last night. I played 2.5 weeks in the preliminaries. I'm home now trying to rejuvenate and kind of get myself back together. And then I go out to Vegas for that after the 4th of July, and then I'm going to come home again for a week or two, whatever, we'll see what it is, and then I'm going back out for the DFCB, you see, so it's, it feels like I'm going to be in Vegas a lot these next couple months here.
Now, last question before we get to the fantasy sports angle. I know a lot of people are curious about how, you know, the ban on online poker here in the States affected a lot of the players. Now, you're located in the, you know, kind of Tahoe, you know, state line of Nevada and in California. I'm sure you probably play some live poker out there as well. Were you a steady online player and then completely had to switch over to live games? Tell me how that impacted you.
Yeah, I mean, I really was an online grinder. That's kind of where I came up through the ranks, and then transitioned more into live. So it definitely affected me. I enjoyed the online grind on Sundays. It was always big tournament days, you know, the Sunday Million and just a whole host of things. I mean, you could be sitting here in your sweatpants and pull 100, 200K a day down, you know, at your house, and I dig that. I'm not really into the hotels and the air courts and eating hotel food and all that stuff. So it was really my thing, and I enjoyed it, and I hope that it's going to come back here in 2013. A lot of the other guys that I know, the regulars, they have taken up residency in Canada, Costa Rica, Mexico, A lot of them fly down to Cabo, and they've got a house that they all join up and they rent together, sort of thing. And they still grind, and they get on there and they can do it. So I'm kind of considering that, maybe doing a Costa Rica thing here towards the end of the year, the World Championships of Online Poker.
Now let's look to the DFBC from the fantasy sports perspective. You're not the first poker player to have some success in daily fantasy sports, but now you have a chance to score the biggest prize in daily fantasy history. Tell me a little bit about how you got into daily fantasy. I know like there's a lot of corollaries between the way daily fantasy set up and like online poker was set up in terms of rake and everything else, but how did you get introduced to it?
You know, I've been kind of a veteran of playing the season-long leagues with ESPN and a couple other ones, and I've noticed, you know, I knew that the daily stuff was going on. I think, actually, another poker player might have started another site, so I was kind of aware of it a year or two ago or however long it was that it was going on, and then I think FanDuel was getting a lot of coverage on the radio, a lot of airplay or something. I heard about it, and like we were talking about with the online stuff, our online poker was gone, and this kind of just came right in and filled the void for me. I mean, I really dig it, and I do a lot of baseball handicapping. It's kind of my forte for sports betting, so I'm already in that baseball grind all summer long, and this was just like it fell right into place with the daily lineups and, you know, research and all of that stuff. So, I heard about it on the radio, got in there, and kind of had some success a little bit, like kind of off the bat. And, it's only about, I think I'm about 2.5 months into it, and I really enjoy it. I'm stoked to be playing in the big one.
Now, you know, your name is MLB Syndicate. Normally when people hear the term syndicate, there's multiple people involved. You're a one-man show, though. Is that correct? Or is there other people with you?
I have another person that I work with who does a lot of the cross capping with me. He does a lot of the sabermetrics, and we consult every day on the card or the night before with the baseball picks. But as far as the fantasy baseball, it's just me. And
And what is it like to handicap baseball? I mean, that's really not necessarily a more glorious or popular sport to handicap. Everything seems to really boil down to professional football, college football, even NBA. I think baseball would be last on the list. How have you found yourself from a success perspective handicapping baseball?
Well, I used to be a baseball player through all my youth and really enjoyed it and a big fan of the sport. So, you know, I always went to baseball games when I was a young kid, and it's just been something that I've always really enjoyed as a summertime sort of thing. And as my sports betting kind of evolved, you know, and going through ups and downs with NBA and NFL and college football and stuff like that, the one thing that's always been solid has been the baseball, and I've just kind of refined the baseball handicapping over the years. And I had 7 winning seasons in a row, and it's just, if I can just leave the other stuff alone, I'll be very profitable at the end of the year. So, but it's a grind too, you know. I mean, 162 games, it's all through the summertime. You really got to be on the ball and know what you're doing, and it's just, I think, more of me being so familiar with the sport and being such a big fan that I love that grind, kind of like the online poker grind. So it's not that tough for me. I enjoy it.
Well, and one certainly helps with the other. I mean, all the research you do in handicapping games certainly helps you in the daily fantasy side of things. And we'll even give you your Twitter handle some pub. Is it not true that you give some picks out on Twitter?
Yeah, we're giving out all our picks for free right now on Twitter, at MLB Syndicate. We had a crazy run in the first month. We went on a 28-4 run in towards the end of April into May, which is pretty rare for the beginning of a season. And we had another pretty sick run just like a week and a half ago. We had like 7 or 8 winning days in a row, sweeping the card a few times. So, yeah, anybody out there that likes to bet baseball games, get on there and follow us on Twitter and see what we're doing, because there's been a lot of money made.
Pretty cool. Jamie Robbins goes by the name MLB Syndicate. Again, that's his Twitter handle as well. He joins us here on the podcast. For most of the contestants, going to Vegas is a pretty glorious thing. You know, they don't they are lucky maybe to go once a year or once every couple of years. I've even had a couple of people who have never been to Vegas. Now, you're clearly somebody who's a Vegas veteran. You'll have gone, you know, two or three times within the month before we head out there at the end of July for the DFBC. How are you going to handle this? It's going to obviously be way different than what you do with poker. The grind is really not much there. After you make your team, you basically sit back, drink your beer, and enjoy the games for the day. Is this going to be a business trip? Is this going to be a fun trip compared to the other times you make it to Vegas? Tell me about, you know, your plans for that weekend.
It's going to be pretty much all business for me. I'll be preparing probably about 2 weeks ahead of time and then really kind of picking it up, you know, about Wednesday or Thursday with the matchups and player personnel and all that. And I think, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but that Saturday night I'll probably be taking it easy because I want to get up nice and early. And I handle things like that pretty professional when I have a poker tournament the next day, as is last Friday night when I won the DFBC qualifier. I came in at about 9:45 at night on a Friday night in Vegas, which is pretty rare for most people. But, you know, I had a tournament the next day and I happened to catch the last three innings of what was going on and see, you know, be able to get a good sweat there. So I'll be handling it like business. And once I pick my team, then we'll break open some champagne and get the mimosas flowing.
I like it. Now, let's talk really lastly about that night that you won. I mean, you had Torrey Hunter, who obviously had a huge impact on your success. Now, a lot of people like to stack. You didn't really do a full stack, just had a couple of guys from the Angels. What philosophy have you been using in putting teams together? And just curious, how many teams have you been putting into the DFBC every single week?
I believe that was the only team I put in that week. I entered maybe 20 or 20-plus games that day and that night because I had the day off. And I did do semi-angel stacks on quite a few of my teams just because they were going to Colorado, and they usually don't play there. And I just had the intuition that a lot of those guys were going to go off smacking the ball. And Torrey Hunter was a good value play.
Yeah.
Going in there. I think he was like 2,500. So I lucked out there. And, yeah, I had Strasburg going to Fenway, which was a nice situation for me. I really knew that he was going to rise to the occasion, being in that historian baseball park. And he did. He got me 22, paid for the price tag. But, yeah, I sometimes I'll stack, and sometimes, you know, I won't have any duplicate players on the same team. It just kind of varies from day to day.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what strategy you use come the DFBC, and that's definitely going to be an exciting event. You know, we've just been invited out there to cover it, so we'll definitely see you out there in Vegas at the end of July. Jamie, thank you so much for your time tonight, and best of luck in a couple of weeks.
Sweet. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Relax. All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist. Throw some ground ball. More democratic. Get a shiver in the
dark. It's raining. Okay, we got 9 games on the schedule tonight. Let's run them through them, give you some plays that we like. Atlanta in New York, the first matchup of the evening. The Yankees going to try to win a 10th straight game for the first time in 7 years. They are absolutely red hot right now. Robinson Cano batting .381, 4 homers in his last 12 games. Also, Curtis Granderson, 4 home runs in the last 8 games. Both those guys went yard yesterday, and they're going against Mike Minor. Now, Minor has one of the worst ERAs in baseball, but he's actually been getting it done the last couple starts, only allowed 1 run in each of his last 2 starts. But the question is, do you really trust this guy against the red-hot Yankees on the road? Not a chance. You know, not a chance. That does not going to make me think twice about stacking up my team with New York Yankees players because, again, he is Mike Minor. As for the Yankees, they have a 1.88 ERA with 81 Ks over 86 innings during their winning streak. Now, CC Sabathia gave up 4 runs in the season-high 10 hits in 7 innings in the matchup earlier against Atlanta, and he really hasn't been spectacular this year, but at home, The Braves have also lost 6 of 7, been shut out in back-to-back games. I think CC Sabathia may be one of the best options for the evening, especially based on price. I mean, you got guys like R.A. Dickey and Matt Cain going, but the price on those guys could just be a little bit too high depending on the site you play. They're really slumping, though, Atlanta hitting the ball. Dan Uggla, 0-95 with no RBIs in the last 7 games. I've told you about him. He's either really good or really bad. There's no in-between, and right now he's really bad, so you want nothing to do with him. If you're looking for a cheap outfielder, maybe Matt Diaz, 6-for-12 off of CC, always hits lefties well. And David Ross with 2 home runs and 10 at-bats. Maybe they move Brian McCann to designated hitter and put him at catcher with some success that he's had against CC. We'll see. Cincinnati and Cleveland, Matt Latos against Derek Lowe. The Reds outscored the Tribe 24-9 in sweeping last week's 3-game series at Great American Ballpark. Brandon Phillips went 8-for-13, 2 homers, 7 ribbies in the series. Joey Votto was 5-for-10 with a couple of homers and 6 RBI. Now, Derek Lowe has lost his 2 starts after going 5-2 with a 2.90 in his previous 8, and Cleveland has actually dropped 5 of 6. I think the Reds are the way to go in this one. I mean, Joey Votto, my goodness, hit safely in 21 of 22 games and batting an amazing .500 with 11 doubles and 19 runs scored. Ryan Ludwig, 9-for-21 with 4 home runs against Derek Lowe. I think that you're going to see Cincinnati score some runs in this game. As for the Reds pitcher, it's Matt Latos. He's 5-0 with a 3.73 ERA in his last 10 starts. Jason Kipnis may be one guy to watch out for. I mean, he's certainly a pricey option at second base, but 5 hits in the last 2 games. Also, Asdrubal Cabrera starting to heat up. He's got a multi-hit game in 3 out of the last 4 for the Indians. Baltimore and the Mets, R.A. Dickey. Who would have thought he would have this season? 8-0 in his last 10 outings, has won 5 consecutive starts while compiling an amazing .23 ERA. And during that stretch, he's struck out 50 and walked just 3 over 39 2/3 innings. Amazing what he's doing right now. He's 37. He throws like a fast knuckleball, something I can't really understand how all of a sudden he's good. And I wonder what the odds were on him to win the Cy Young before the season started. I mean, they must have been like 500 to 1. I mean, nobody would have predicted this. The Orioles, they've won 7 of 8 to improve to 9-3 in interleague play. The question is, do you really want to go against a pitcher as hot as R.A. Dickey right now? And I don't think you do. I mean, I look up and down that lineup. Adam Jones is hitting the ball pretty well. Weeders kind of broke out of his slump the last couple weeks. But ultimately, I think you got to stay away from people in this situation. Baltimore, they put Jake Arrieta on the mound. He had gone 0-6 with an ERA over 9 in his previous 7 starts before allowing 1 run, 7 hits, and fanning a career-high 9 over 7 innings in his last start when Brian Matthews got hurt. Now, New York is coming off a 3-game sweep at the hands of the Reds, which they scored a combined 5 runs, and they dropped 4 in a row at home, 9 out of the last 13 overall. To be honest with you, I'm not overly excited about many offensive players in this one. I might consider David Wright, Kurt Nieuwenhuis for the Mets. Nieuwenhuis, he's batting .321 against right-handed pitchers this year. I mean, Jake Arrieta, I think probably what we saw last start for him was an aberration. So if you want to think where there's going to be runs scored in this one, you got to think it's going to be on the New York Mets side. Kansas City and Houston, Jonathan Sanchez against Jay Happ. Kansas City looks to win for the 6th time in 7 games when it opens a 3-game set at Minute Maid Park tonight. Jonathan Sanchez allowed 1 run in 5 innings in his first start off the disabled list. He's had 2 starts in Houston, done pretty well, 1-1 with a 1.29 ERA. But right now, Houston's not hitting the ball. Jed Lowry, one of their best hitters, big-time slump, 2-for-25. That's 0-80 over his last 7 games. Jose Altuve, 2-for-12 in the series against the Rangers. So right now, I think as much as I don't care for Jonathan Sanchez because he's got, you know, major control issues and he's usually out of the game by like the 5th or 6th inning, Houston is just not hitting the ball well right now, so he's probably the play in this one because I've seen Jay Happ pitch, and he is not very good. He's lost his last 4 starts, ERA over 7, failing to complete 5 innings in his last 2. Just a pretty terrible pitcher in my estimation. He's been a little bit better at home on the road, but there's still no way I would consider taking him. Maybe look at Mike Moustakas. He's done really well lately, had, I think, 3 hits the last couple games, and he's really improved from year 1 to year 2 for the Royals. Chicago and Chicago, White Sox and Cubs. in the Windy City Classic. It's Matt Garza against Zach Stewart, who's getting the start for the Shy Sox. Now, the Cubs have dropped 9 out of their last 12 games on the South Side since 2009. And you have to figure they're going to be in a tough challenge here because Matt Garza, as great as he is talent-wise, he just has not been able to put it together. 0-4, 5.26 ERA in his last 7 starts, and he has not done well against the White Sox. 1-4, ERA of 5 in his 7 career starts against the Shy Sox. Now, Paul Konerko, he's 6-for-12, 2 doubles, 2 home runs off of Garza. Alex Rios, only 5-for-25, even though he's been heating up, I'd probably stay away from him. Adam Dunn, 1-for-7, 5 strikeouts against Garza, but he does have 5 home runs, 12 RBIs over the last 8 games. One guy to consider highly, I think, for Chicago on the infield is Gordon Beckham. 3.49 average against the Cubs is his best against any opponent. He's actually hit safely in 18 of the 19 career games against the Cubs. Now, Zach Stewart makes his first start of the year today. You have to wonder how many innings he'll go. He was 2-6 with an ERA of 6 in his 11 starts last season. The good news for him, the Cubs stink pretty much at hitting. Joe Mather and Alfonso Soriano both took him deep in his last appearance as a reliever against the Cubs. But honestly, I'm not excited about him. But again, the Cubs are so terrible, you could probably do worse. Toronto and Milwaukee, Henderson Alvarez against Randy Wolf. Wolf is 0-3 with an ERA of 4.10 and 8 starts since his last win against San Diego on April 3rd. Now, Colby Rasmus is heating up, 356, 7 homers in 15 games since batting second in the lineup as compared to a 211 average in any other spot in the lineup. So they're smart. They keep him there. But I like Brett Lawrie today. 342 average against left-handed pitchers. I think he'll have a good game. Rasmus, usually not great against lefties, batting below 200 this year, but he's 4-for-7 with a triple and a homer off of Wolf in his career. So don't hesitate to take Colby Rasmus today. The big bats, Edwin Encarnacion, 1-for-11 off of Wolf. Jose Bautista, 194 against lefties. Might not be worth the price on those guys today. Henderson Alvarez has been slumping, going 0-4 with an ERA of 5.5 and 6 starts since his last win on May 10th. Now, Ricky Weeks, he's got a terrible batting average, like 177, but maybe he's starting to come around. 5 hits in the last 2 games. Ryan Braun still playing pretty well, 12-game hit streak for Milwaukee. Seattle and Arizona, Hector Nuisi against Wade Miley. Arizona has not scored in the past 21 innings. Luckily, though, they get Nuisi on the mound because he sucks pretty bad. 0-4, ERA of 5 over his last 7 outings, and he is terrible on the road. 0-3 in his 7 starts with an 8.15 ERA. That's one of the worst in baseball. And the Diamondbacks, they have won 5 straight at home, so maybe they can turn things around. Some of these guys are going to have to. Chris Young went 1-for-11 over the weekend. Willie Bloomquist, 1-for-8. Miguel Montero, Paul Goldschmidt, both went 1-for-7. So Arizona's bats pretty cold right now, but I think this is a good spot for them. Wade Miley coming off a great start against the Rangers. You'd think he should be able to handle Seattle pretty well. He's been one of the biggest surprises as a rookie pitcher this season. Ichiro struggling right now, under 200 in his last 13 games as he went 1-for-12 over the weekend. As Seattle won 2-of-3 against San Francisco. Speaking of San Francisco, the Giants take on the Angels. Matt Cain has won his last 7 starts while posting a ERA under 2 and hasn't allowed an earned run in the last 20 innings. He's going to be insanely expensive. And I'll tell you what, I don't think you can take him today because I'll tell you why. The last 9 perfect game pitchers are combined 3-4 with a 5.56 ERA following their history-making performance. Also, Cain, he did well against LA earlier, held them to 1 hit and 1 earned run in 8 innings, but that was long time ago, back in 2006. Albert Pujols, look at these numbers, 8-for-14, 2 homers and a double, 4 walks, lifetime against Cain. I've got a hunch, you usually see a big letdown after the perfect games and the no-hitters, so I'm not going to pay the price on Matt Cain today. He's just going to be way too expensive. Jerome Williams, he's given up 12 runs in the last 2 outings, going 3-1 with an ERA under 3 in his previous 4. One guy to consider for San Francisco who might not be terribly expensive is Brandon Belt. He's hitting the ball well. 368, 3 homers, 7 RBIs in the last 6 games for the Giants. Also, Melky Cabrera continues his hot hitting. .350, two homers, six RBIs in his last six games. And the last game to discuss for tonight, Texas-San Diego, Matt Harrison against Jason Marquis. Now, Texas swept Houston over the weekend without Josh Hamilton, who probably will return to the lineup Monday. And Harrison, he's going to try again for his ninth victory after his four-start win streak ended last Wednesday in a Texas 1-0 1-0 victory over Arizona. He didn't get the win in that one, but he's still been pitching well. 6-1, 3.51 ERA, and 7 starts away from home. 4-0 with a 1.42 ERA in his last 5 starts overall. I think he's a great option today. Padres hitting, they don't scare anybody. They're not going to scare Matt Harrison. Carlos Quinton, maybe the biggest bat in their lineup. He's only 2 for 12, but does have a home run and a double against Harrison. As for Texas, they hit .327, scored 23 runs without Hamilton in this weekend sweep against Houston, and now they get the gas can known as Jason Marquis. Adrian Beltre, 6 for 13 with a homer and 5 RBIs. Elvis Andrews, 5 for 11, 3 stolen bases. Craig Gentry, 4 for 8, 3 runs. That was all stats from this past series against Houston, and Adrian Beltre looks like a lock today. 7 for 16 off of Marquis. Stack up these Rangers. Jason Marquis is not very good, I'm telling you right now. Texas going to score some runs, even though San Diego, not a great hitter's ballpark. I think they're going to get it done today. So that's the rundown of Major League Baseball for Monday night. Best of luck in your matchups. Time for me to say a quick thank you to my friends over there at Daily Joust. If you haven't played over there at Joust, you need to do it because, hey, they're the people who really make this podcast happen. So if you enjoy what we do, please support them. They are our main sponsor for this podcast. Lots of stuff going on there. Tonight they got a King James $500 MLB jousting tournament. That's 55 spots, $10 a person. If you don't like the stacked tournaments, or if you don't like team stacking, they are one of the few sites offering a guaranteed non-stack tournament, $22 entry on that 25-man tournament. Make sure you check that out over there on Daily Joust. They also will have their solo survivor tournaments. They usually start up on Tuesday. The key to that is you have to have won a solo one time in the past 7 days. So if you haven't won one, make sure you go ahead and play one of those. If you don't know what a solo contest is, it's basically you play the house. If you score 60 points, you win. If you score less than 60 points, they win. So it's kind of a new concept. You don't have to worry about playing the really marquee name players. You don't have to worry about a whole bunch of people or one guy taking all your games. Just straight game against the house where you got to hit 60. They also got tons of other promotions out there and something new where you share your results on Facebook, and they're actually going to give you cash for doing it. So lots of different things going on. All-Star Joust, Super Joust, just a couple of the promos they have. So make sure you check them out. They are DailyJoust.com. And with that, I'm going to say goodbye to you for today. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. We'll be back at you same time, same place here on Roto Grinders tomorrow. Please follow us on Twitter. It is at Roto Grinders. You can also go to our Facebook page and definitely go over to iTunes where you can find this podcast. Click that subscription button, and then guess what? It downloads it for you each and every day once we get this podcast uploaded. So till tomorrow, everybody, have yourself a great and winning night. We'll do it again then. See you, folks.